Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
So you have the more mainstream, electorally oriented people trying to pull the Patriot Movement activists into the Republican Party. And you have the more racist, anti-Semitic leaders trying to pull it towards overt white supremacy and anti-Semitism and armed rebellion.
Chip Brulé of Political Research Associates in the Boston area joins us to discuss the murder of Kansas physician George Tiller, who was shot while he attended church. Chip Brulé is co-author of Right-Wing Populism in America, Too Close for Comfort, and editor of Eyes Right, Challenging the Right-Wing Backlash. Both received a Gustavus Myers Center Award for Outstanding Scholarship on the subject of human rights and bigotry in North America. Chip Brulé is also on the board of the National Committee Against Repressive Legislation and on the advisory board of the Center for Millennial Studies. You can read an archive of his articles from the Progressive Magazine and other publications online at publiceye.org. Dr. George Tiller was shot to death while attending the Reformation Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Dr. Tiller was one of only a handful of U.S. doctors willing to perform late-term abortions. Typically, these are cases with extreme health circumstances. The suspect, 51-year-old Scott P. Roeder of Merriam, Kansas, was reported to have suffered from mental illness, according to family members. Kansas City Star reporters Laura Bauer and Judy L. Thomas have reported that Roeder relied on Cheryl Sullinger, a senior policy advisor to the anti-abortion group Operation Rescue, to track information about Dr. Tiller. Scott Roeder apparently had Sullinger's phone number with him when he was arrested a few hours after the shooting. Sullinger herself had served 2 years for conspiring to bomb an abortion clinic in California in 1988. The staff at the Kansas City Star were surprised to learn that Scott Roeder actually worked there for a time, according to Ken Batrick, the paper's circulation director.
Well, we didn't actually have him on staff. He had signed a contract with us, a delivery contract. I never met the man. You know, he signed a contract in mid-April and delivered a once-a-week type route that delivered circulars to non-subscribers, and I think he did that for 2 or 3 weeks, and then he quit.
He just up and left?
Yeah, he just told us that he was not wanting to do it anymore, according to what the person who worked with him told me, and just left. I mean, I think he delivered either 2 or 3 weeks.
Now, have the FBI police been interviewing staff at the Star?
Not to my knowledge, I don't think. Certainly not to my knowledge, I doubt. There's very much they would glean because he'd come in, pick up the papers, go deliver them, and that was it, once a week for a couple hours. I mean, I think he made like $12 a week, no exaggeration.
In light of the Tiller murder, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder ordered increased security for some abortion clinics and doctors. There is also a developing story in Connecticut. Hartford police say they will charge 47-year-old Harold Hal Turner from North Bergen, New Jersey, for inciting injury to persons or property after Turner allegedly began inciting viewers of his blog to take up arms against Representative Mike Lawler and Senator Andrew McDonald. At issue was a bill that is now dead. It could have changed the way Catholic churches handled finances. Turner has been involved in radio, may have ties to Fox Network's Sean Hannity, and has been described as a white supremacist blogger. In previous weeks, a former Marine, Dominic Vita, was also arrested after he apparently threatened a lawmaker about a bill to decriminalize marijuana, and 26-year-old Timothy Kane has now apologized for threatening lawmakers.
Dr. George Tiller in Kansas, known as Tiller the Baby Killer. Dr. George Tiller, known as Tiller the Baby Killer, Tiller the Baby Killer.
Dr. George Tiller was a frequent target of Fox Network's Bill O'Reilly, whose mantra about the doctor was Tiller the Baby Killer.
Tiller is executing fetuses in his Wichita clinic.
In response to criticism after Dr. Tiller's death, Bill O'Reilly referred to his critics as left-wing fanatics.
When I heard about Tiller's murder, I knew pro-abortion zealots and Fox News haters would attempt to blame us for the crime, and that is exactly what has happened.
We turn now to Chip Roulet, a senior analyst at Political Research Associates, PRA, for his insights about the Tiller murder and news that the alleged killer had links to right-wing militant groups. Chip Roulet, welcome again to Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks, Joy. Glad to be back.
Let me just ask you to reflect on your first reaction when you heard that Dr. George Tiller was killed.
I was saddened. I have been following anti-abortion violence and right-wing populism for over 20 years, and I was hoping that that phase of militant anti-abortion activity had passed, but at the same time, I had written in The Progressive and other places just a couple months ago that the election of Obama might, in fact, trigger violence because so many white men feel displaced in our society, and so many demagogues from the conservative movement are inflaming this sector without, I think, realizing how frequently right-wing populist movements spin out people who turn to violence.
You mentioned some of that in your piece with Matthew Lyons, Militia Nation, in The Progressive, right?
Well, yes, but also just as recently as a couple months ago, the Progressive asked me to look at what is the likely right-wing response to the election of Obama, and I reached back to my work with Matt Lyons to point out that historically, when there's a shift to the left or towards more equality or against traditional hierarchies in the political sphere, these right-wing populist movements tend to form. They tend to involve a lot of white men who feel displaced, and then they tend to spin off individuals or small groups that turn to violence because they think they have no other options before them. So this is something Matt and I spent a lot of time working on in our book, Right-Wing Populism in America, to explain this happens over and over again. And right now we're seeing a period of right-wing populism spawned in part by the Glenn Becks and Ann Coulters and others who have used the kind of rhetoric that is really designed to inflame people and to encourage people to be militant. There's nothing wrong with being militant in a democratic sense, small d, within the confines of the political system, but right-wing populist groups generally move outside the electoral system and become oppositional in a way that's very destructive.
Now, you've also noted that there's been a convergence of right-wing groups, and then there's also a lot of misunderstanding about how the groups converge. In other words, it's a kind of difficult thread to follow, and I know you've been following it for many years. Just identify maybe the particular branch we're talking about here. Colonel William Gale's name has come up, Christian Identity Movement. I mean, just help us follow the thread in your thinking, though, about what we can honestly put together versus what maybe we're just guessing about.
Well, there's a lot of guessing. There's a problem, of course, that this is an individual who is a suspect, and he has certainly not had trial. So let's talk about the accused perpetrator here, and let's talk about the fact that there's a lot of misinformation and bad research going on where these linkages are said, well, this is clear, when it's not at all clear. What we know is that this is a man who has been involved in several related movements. Obviously, he's been involved in the anti-abortion movement, but there's a militant wing of the anti-abortion movement that started to overlap with the Patriot movement and the armed citizens' militias, but also began to overlap with a kind of theocratic, anti-democratic religious philosophy built around Christian Reconstructionism, but also a theocratic religious philosophy called Christian Identity, not related to Christian Reconstructionism, which really is built around a white supremacist view of the Jews as not being the real Jews, that the real Jews are white Christian men. And so Fred Clarkson has written about this for the Southern Poverty Law Center in a piece that's being widely cited on the web, and he's really quite careful to make these distinctions, that this is an overlap involving everyone from tax protesters through the anti-abortion movement, through the Patriot movement, all the way out to the white supremacist movement. Now, is Mr. Roeder probably in this milieu someplace? Yes. Are there hints of his religious views being similar to several of these strands? Yes. But we don't know much beyond that. But what we do know is that every time a pro-life, quote-unquote, group claims that they have no responsibility for this kind of action and every time a radio and television pundit from the right says, of course, it's unfair to say that rhetoric led to this, we can say that we know historically that inflammatory rhetoric, which picks out a target and suggests that they're engaged in murder or a Holocaust, that there are going to be some people who decide that that needs to be acted on. And there is a militant wing of the anti-abortion movement that says, if you think abortion is murder, then act like it. And what they really mean is it's okay to go out and kill abortion providers because either that's a moral choice or it's God's moral choice. And we know through historical study of how these movements turn to violence that rhetoric does play a role. As the First Amendment gives Hannity and Dobbs and Beck the absolute right to say these things if someone wants to put them on the air or put them in print. But as a society, we have to recognize that this is part of the inflammatory rhetoric that generates violence throughout history.
You know, it's been mentioned frequently that Scott Roeder, the man arrested in the murder of Dr. Tiller, was a Freeman. What can you tell us about that group?
It's not clear that he was a member of the Freeman group. What I think has happened here is that a file on the Freeman included a larger group of people known as sovereign citizens, which is something that was very popular in the militia movement as well. And there are all these little movements under the banner of the Patriot Movement, the armed citizens militias, the constitutionalists, the sovereign citizen movement, the Posse Comitatus movement, all of these movements sort of are part of this larger patriot movement. And so what you can say is that he was part of the sovereign citizen movement, an idea of citizenship, which is inherently racist because it argues that real natural citizens are white people and that black people were given temporary or legislative citizenship through a variety of amendments and federal laws. So it comes out of this mix of arcane conspiracy theories about secret elites and government power and various plots. And it's rooted in white supremacy. Although, you know, I've interviewed a number of sovereign citizen type people who absolutely say, well, there isn't a racist bone in my body. But, you know, their constitutional arguments are inherently white supremacist. So we know that that's something that Roeder was involved in. But beyond that, not fair to say he was a Freeman per se, definitely fair to say he was a sovereign citizen. And this does locate him in the Patriot Movement. And the real question now is which religious variation he follows. There's been some hints in the LA Times and on BeliefNet.
And we've heard Fox Network's Bill O'Reilly mention Dr. Tiller over and over again in his program for years. I think mischaracterizing, too, the services that Dr. Tiller provided. Democracy Now! Has reported that Dr. Tiller treated a patient who was pregnant through horrific circumstances at the age of 9. And evidently, many women have come forward to say he helped them deal with a pregnancy that was extremely dangerous in terms of their own health.
Right. I was at a vigil last night at an Episcopal cathedral in downtown Boston for Dr. Tiller, and people who knew him, people who referred patients to him, spoke about the kind of work he did was not this glib, let's just have abortion, you know, for any reason. He was a person who dealt with very tricky cases, poor people who didn't really get to him in time to meet some of the first trimester requirements, women who had dead fetuses in their bodies, and it was a health risk to carry the pregnancy any further. All kinds of stories that were told yesterday at this vigil were heartbreaking, and all of these very powerful, militant feminist women getting up saying, here is a man who understood what a woman's right to choose meant. Here is a man whose entire facility was built around being very sensitive to the needs of the women under his care. And so this portrayal of Tiller as a kind of a glib, you know, abortionist is as outlandish. It's a lie. These men, and mostly men, a few women who say these things should be ashamed of themselves. And yes, I hold them culpable, not legally. I recognize their First Amendment rights, but this kind of violence does trace back to their kind of rhetoric.
I want to ask you about a comment that Michael Savage made.
This country today is far beyond has gone far beyond the excesses of the Weimar Republic, which led to Adolf Hitler. God forbid that should ever happen here. But the German people, who were not all Nazis prior to Hitler's arrival on the scene, were shocked by the degenerates of Berlin. They were sickened. The average person in Germany was sickened by the perverts. They were sickened by the artists. They were just sickened by the leather fetishists. They were sickened by the degeneracy, and they couldn't handle it.
Hard to understand, but he's making an argument in understanding of the Nazis.
Let's unpack what he means by that. He is echoing a claim that has been thoroughly refuted by serious social scientists. Two claims, essentially. One is that Nazism was a form of socialism when it was applied by Hitler. And certainly it was had some socialists at its roots, but it then turned into something else called fascism. And most scholars of fascism say that fascism, while it may have roots in socialism, eventually turns to the right and forms an alliance with the most reactionary and right-wing elements in the society. So that's the first allegation in there. So they're trying to say, well, you know, liberals, like in California, are paving us a slippery slope towards collectivism and socialism and Stalinism and tyranny. The second one is just, you know, homophobia. And it's built around this idea that decadence includes wanton women and gay people. So it's wanton women and homosexuals. And they look at the Weimar regime and they look, you know, think of the movie Cabaret, and they argue that it was the decadence and the immorality of the society that allowed the Nazis to come to power. There is absolutely no evidence of this in any serious social science literature. This is something that goes way back to the early John Birch Society in the late 1950s, 59 to 1960, where they developed a theory that liberalism, because of its decadence and its moral relativism, was going to destroy America, just like you saw with the previous historic civilizations, that decadence is what destroys civilizations, and therefore it is important to stand up. And so this is essentially a coded rhetoric about liberalism being a slippery slope towards Stalinist tyranny, and that moral relativism allows women to be wanton and wayward and have their sexuality and their bodies controlled by themselves. And these homosexuals, who, there's even a book that claims that Nazism was in fact created by a network of homosexuals. There's no doubt that there were some homosexuals in the National Socialist movement, but I would like to point out for history buffs that when Hitler got power, he turned around and had them killed in the Night of the Long Knives. So it's kind of hard to argue that Hitler kept that as a theme, because he physically assassinated the National Socialist wing of his movement before he consolidated power.
We do see a lot of layering. I mean, Ann Coulter on Fox says the only way to talk to a liberal is with a baseball bat. She then always explains that, you know, she's only joking. Then this kind of militant rhetoric crops up during discussions about news and certainly hot button issues. President Obama appoints Judge Sotomayor, and discussions shifts into this sort of fear-oriented commentary, her views on women, Latino women versus white men, her views on abortion. She's likely to be pro-choice, but she's not said anything about the subject. Her views on immigration, and this, of course, all taking place amid very serious anxiety about the U.S. economy. Just tell us what you can about the way the rhetoric and the news cycles kind of get folded in together, and how that affects the discussion and even actions of, you know, militant organizations that are maybe trending toward violence. But then, you know, there's a subject in the news, and perhaps, you know, soon after that, we see an act of violence.
Well, it's very complicated, Dory. So let's start with a little history. Who will rid me of this troublesome priest, King Henry, you know, of Thomas Becket? You know, people say, oh, I'm not serious, or, you know, I'm not suggesting violence, but this person's a multi-murderer, it's a Holocaust. These are people that Hannah Arendt would talk about, the kind of phrasing that totalitarians use to promote violence is always, they distance themselves, and they ask questions like, who's going to stand up for these people? Who's going to stand up for these unborn children? When are we going to act? They ask these kinds of questions. They make these statements, and then they say, well, I'm just kidding. This is a technique of totalitarians and demagogues, and we know that there are people who hear those as call to action. So that's number one. Number two, that conspiracy thinking on the political right has been a mainstay of American political science since Hofstadter's work, and even before. And what we know is that with the election, even before the election of Obama, there was a whole set of right-wing conspiracy theories about a North American Union. And these are driven from two different sources. One is secular, one is religious. The religious one is built around the idea that we are facing the end times, the apocalypse is coming, God is about to judge us, and as long as there is abortion and gay rights, we're putting off the second coming of Jesus Christ. In the secular world, it's built around a libertarian economic themes that were used to attack the Franklin Roosevelt administration, that liberals bring collectivism, they bring tyranny, they bring a slippery slope towards Stalinism, and we see with the election of Obama that the stops have been pulled out on this grand media organ of the right, and it's blaring out these claims about conspiracy and the future of the nation under Obama that are outlandish and yet widely believed in certain sectors of the political right. So what the murder, let's call it a murder, it's not a death, he didn't pass away, the assassination of Dr. Tiller puts this into a much more complicated situation. And I think what we're seeing is the media almost instantly falling into the right-wing frame, calling Dr. Tiller controversial, calling him an abortionist. He was a gynecologist. Yes, he performed abortions, but he was a doctor. We're seeing immediately the press reporting these claims from all these right-to-life and pro-life groups saying, of course we would never suggest violence, when in fact some of the leaders of these very movements suggest violence all the time by actually circulating literature that talks about the justification defense in stopping abortionists with a bullet. So this is baloney, and the press is sucking it right up, and really, it's shameful. I mean, don't we have journalists who can step out of this media baloney and start dishing up something substantial for a meal? I mean, I am so angry at this assassination, and I'm so angry at the mainstream media for immediately falling into step with these right-wing frames. The framing is very important. Irving Goffman, George Lakoff, Bill Gamson, Charlotte Ryan, all people who talk about if you adopt the frame of your opposition, you are probably going to lose the argument. And so the right has immediately undercut the rights of women and human rights and a calm inspection of differences over the issue of abortion by jumping right into the right-wing frame presented to them by these pro-life zealots. It's just tragic.
You've written, and these articles available again on publiceye.org, that the Patriot movement is bracketed on the moderate side by the John Birch Society and some of Pat Robertson's followers, and on the more militant side by Liberty Lobby and avowedly white supremacist or anti-Semitic groups such as neo-Nazi groups. Then you say the leadership of pre-existing far-right groups such as Posse Comitatus, the Aryan Nations, and the Christian Patriots are attempting to steer the armed militia movement toward these white supremacist and racist ideologies. Just explain more about what these groups represent.
It's tough because it's very arcane. I mean, there's not a lot of people who study these movements, even in sociology. And it's very complicated because there's a lot of little small sects and small fissures and splits and splinter groups. What I'm saying, and that was written at a time when there was a slightly different set of organizations, but the basic theme is the same. Today, to make it clear, I would say one wing of the Patriot movement is rooted in the anti-tax movement and the anti-immigrant movement. And in fact, you could look at some of the recent teabag tax protests as emblematic of this. There were some of them that were just economic libertarians and anti-tax, but there were also some of them who were, you know, white supremacists and anti-Semites and neo-Nazis. So, of course, the more mainstream side of the tax protest people say, well, we have nothing to do with those people over there with the sign about Jews owning all the banks. You know, that's not us. But whether they're conscious or willing participants, they're part of this broad patriot movement. And there's battles on both sides. So you have the more mainstream, electorally oriented people trying to pull the Patriot movement activists into the Republican Party. And you have the more racist, anti-Semitic leaders trying to pull it towards overt white supremacy and anti-Semitism and armed rebellion. And this just goes on constantly. It's a never-ending struggle for this populist right-wing movement that comes and goes in American politics. So it's very difficult for the mainstream media to look at this and make sense. So they say, well, he's on a Freeman watch list from the FBI, so he must be a Freeman. Well, not exactly, but close. I think little by little, as more and more decent reporters for print publications start to dig into this, because they have more time to dig into these facts, you're going to see it come out more clearly what elements of this patriot movement are involved in this murder. I understand it's complicated, and I think time will tell here, and we'll see more and more details emerging. But today, we have the same dynamic. We have everyone from the tax protester side of the patriot movement to the militant armed revolution side of the patriot movement involved in trying to frame this last event to their advantage, and it's very complicated.
But they're trying to pull in support from wherever they can find it, right?
And absolutely. What we saw with a little before the election of Obama with these conspiracy theories about the North American Union, but after the election of Obama, what you saw were some of these so-called conservative media pundits, whether it was Lou Dobbs or Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck, starting to pick up the exact rhetoric of the Patriot Movement and its conspiracy theories and its outlandish allegations about liberalism and collectivism and paving a path to socialism and tyranny, that the militia movement and the patriot movement and the sovereign citizens have been using for over a decade. And they can't claim ignorance. They can't say, well, I didn't know where it came from. This is a political technique that is used in periods when there's a struggle over the Republican Party. And you have some elements of the Republican Party who want to move it to the right, towards the Palin wing. And you have some elements of the Republican Party who want to move it back towards the center. That's a more mainstream wing. Certainly John McCain represents that wing, but there's a lot of other mainstream Republicans. You know, you're going to be hearing more about some of those people as this battle continues. But what you have with Dobbs and Hannity and Beck and others, Ann Coulter, a whole raft of individuals, is an attempt to shore up the militant right wing of the Republican Party and using the rhetoric of a groups further to the right of the Republican Party to try and draw them into the Republican Party to increase their strength. And this happens around the world when political parties are out of power and are seeking to build their right-wing flank. You see this battle between the mainstream and the right-wing factions, and you see the right-wing faction trying to recruit out of this broader right-wing populist movement that is somewhat outside the electoral system but are potential voters for the right-wing party in this battle.
Chip Berlet is a senior researcher at Political Research Associates in the Boston area and co-author of the book Right-Wing Populism in America, Too Close for Comfort. Chip Berlet, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm very happy to be a guest on a program that actually thinks about the topics it discusses. Thank you so much, Dory.
Thank you. We will hear from Chip Berlet again next time as we develop this story on America's right-wing militants, those who tolerate them or even support them in the mainstream media, and also the question of justice in America, whether or not any U.S. state can meet the standards necessary to try death penalty cases. We'll hear from Douglas Schwartz. He's the director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Center. And while Connecticut residents support the death penalty, we'll raise questions about how much they actually know about how death penalty cases are actually tried and the overall cost involved. Over the summer, we'll air our reviews of the Obama administration's policy on Mideast war, the environment, the economy, and questions about accountability for members of the previous administration who violated U.S. and international laws on torture or while at war. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced at Talk Nation Radio Studios in Storrs, Connecticut. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. You can write to us at TalkNationRadio@gmail.com.